Hello, and welcome to Around and About Chattanooga. I am your host, Michael Edward Miller. Clothing has become cheap in America. Many Americans buy far more clothes than they actually need. In this segment, we're going to talk about why clothes are so cheap these days and how the fast fashion industry has some downsides. My guest is a New York author named Elizabeth Klein. Her book, Overdressed: The Shockingly High Cost of Cheap Fashion, came out last year. She says the average American buys 68 garments every year. Elizabeth Klein, welcome to Around and About.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
And first of all, the reason why we're talking to you today, you'll actually be here in the Chattanooga area January 30th. Where exactly will you be on the 30th? What are you going to be doing?
I'm going to be giving a talk at Dalton State College. I believe the talk is at 6:30 p.m., so I'm going to be covering some of the issues that you and I are going to be discussing today, just about how clothing or consumption of clothing has changed over the last 15 years and what we can do to be more ethical consumers.
In the book, you say that you counted all the clothes in your closet at one point, and you found out you owned 354 pieces of clothing. And that's not unusual either for a lot of Americans to have that many clothes stored up, because clothes are so cheap. And another thing, it's not shameful to buy cheap clothing. Nobody thinks that you're poor because you bought a shirt for $10. They think you're a bargain shopper. How does this compare to, like, right, 1990 or 1950, the way, as you were saying, we used to buy clothes?
Well, yeah, you brought up a lot of good points there. Our consumption of clothing has roughly doubled since the early 90s, and that is because the average price of clothing has plummeted. Surely you can go out and spend thousands of dollars on a designer piece of clothing, but just the average piece of clothing is very cheap compared to what it was, say, 10 or 20 years ago. And also, as you pointed out, it's not shameful to buy cheap. It has a certain cachet to it now. Cheap clothes are extremely fashionable. It's very easy to buy something that's on trend, that's cheap. And it's sort of fueled this, you know, kind of national shopping binge that's been going on for quite some time now. And I'm as guilty as the next person.
That sounds like it's kind of what spurred you to write this book in the first place, because you were going through your own closet and just wondering, where do all these clothes come from and why are they so cheap? Why do I have so many?
Yeah, I don't consider myself to be a fashionista or a shopaholic or anything like that. But, you know, most Americans, the average American buys 68 garments and 7 pairs of shoes per year. So my consumption, I had over 300 items. That's something that the average American would be accumulating in just, you know, 4 or 5 years. So yes, our consumption of clothing has skyrocketed over the last couple of decades. And I really wanted to know what was behind all of these huge changes in the way that we buy and even think about clothing.
And it seems like one of the things you're saying in the book is because the clothes are so cheap, they don't last very long. They fall apart, you know, literally rip, tear, fall apart in the mm-hmm. wash. So you have to buy more of them. What are some of the other reasons why we are buying so many clothes?
I think it just really, it gets down to the low price of clothes, but also the fashion cycle has sped up so much. So trends are changing at a very rapid pace today. And there's also more trends that exist at any given time. You know, there are new looks, new fads coming into style, dozens if not hundreds of them coming into style every season. And, you know, things might not stick around for more than like a couple months or maybe a year. Whereas if you go back to, like, you know, the 70s, 80s, 90s, you saw whole decades of style, eras of style, and now trends are exhausted very quickly, and this just makes us consume, adds to this problem of overconsumption.
And you talk about how in the 1990s, you know, 50% of the clothes we wore were made here in America. Now, basically, mm-hmm. none of them are made here in America. So we've got China, we've got India making all these clothes for the manufacturers who then ship them over here and sell them very cheaply. But conditions can be very unsafe. In April last year, there was the garment factory collapse in Bangladesh that killed more than 1,000 people. There have also been fires in other problems over there. Do you think Americans just don't know all this, or do we just turn a blind eye because maybe we don't know what else to do?
Well, I mean, as you're saying, we went from 20 years ago to making almost half of our clothing in the United States to now we make about 3%. So as consumers, it's very difficult to find out anything about where your clothes are being made or how they're being made because they're being made on the other side of the world. I think that consumers do care. I think that there was an enormous amount of outrage surrounding that factory collapse in Bangladesh that killed more than 1,000 people. And these problems are just going to continue to happen because the fashion industry is so focused on low price and on constant novelty. You know, it's all about new products at the lowest possible price, which is why the industry is operating in, you know, extremely poor developing countries like Bangladesh to begin with.
And you, in the process of writing the book, actually went to Bangladesh. You went undercover as someone who was going to buy a lot of clothes from these factories. What did you see in these factories in Bangladesh?
Bangladesh, I went to China and Bangladesh, and I think what really struck me the most about the industry there is that it's completely unregulated. I didn't see any sort of supervision going on from Western brands. So whatever is happening there, whenever brands leave, you know, consumers aren't going to be able to get information about what's going on there. And the other thing is that it's an industry where most of the workers who are working in it are extremely poor women, and they need these jobs. They're not going to say no to working long hours. They're not going to say no if someone tells them to stay overnight to finish an order at the last minute. They're in a very economically disadvantaged position, and that's why a lot of these tragedies are happening.
And you actually went over there before the big factory collapse. So when you heard about that, what was your reaction? Were you surprised to hear that?
No. Unfortunately, I was extremely shocked. I mean, it's so many people. It's beyond heartbreaking. You know, it's so awful. I think that, you know, for anyone who's traveled to Bangladesh, the structural problems in the buildings is something that kind of like hits you right away. You can see it, you know, the buildings just aren't sturdy. And I'm actually surprised that there was an 8-story factory in Bangladesh to begin with. I would not want to be on the 8th floor of any building in Bangladesh, you know?
Really?
And and so that's, I think, why a lot of the reforms that have happened since then are really focused on the building codes and the structural problems. We're talking about a country that is so underdeveloped that construction codes aren't even being monitored and kept up with.
And one of the things you talk about in the book, you know, you can go to a factory and they might have safety standards. They might be attempting to pay their workers a living wage. But if they get a big order, then they ship that out to a factory that may not have those standards. Could you talk about that a little bit?
That's the process of subcontracting, which is where a factory will illegally farm out work to another factory that might not have the same workplace or safety codes as the factory that the retailer actually hired to do the work. And this is a widespread problem in the fashion industry. And it really comes down to the fact that, you know, there's such a high demand for new orders to be produced and to be produced quickly. And if, you know, a factory in Bangladesh, if there's not a representative from the brand around, there's nothing to stop them from farming that out to a factory down the street that might not have the same working conditions or standards that the main factory has. It's very, very hard to police and it's hard to control.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking to Elizabeth Klein. She's the author of Overdressed, The Shockingly High Cost of Cheap Fashion. She'll be here in the Chattanooga area January 30th. It sounds like it would just be really hard for someone who wants to make a conscious choice to support fair trade and manufacturers to even do that if factories can just farm their work out to a factory that has lower standards.
You're right. You know, the supply chains in the fashion industry have gotten, they're very spread out. It is very difficult from a consumer standpoint to feel like you can do anything. And I do think that consumers have a lot of power, but this issue is also bigger than us. You know, we need our government to police our corporations better. We need the retailers themselves to better regulate their suppliers, because I don't believe for a second that a company like H&M can't properly monitor all of its factories. If it wanted to, if they really wanted to, they could. That said, there are companies that are making strides, and they're taking steps in the right direction. First of all, you know, there's a list of dozens of companies who signed the Bangladesh Fire and Safety Accord, and you can go online and see which retailers have signed onto that, which means that they're making a financial and legal commitment to improving factories in that country. So if you're a consumer, I would say start there. Support the stores that are on that list. Beyond that, there are a lot of companies that are making fashion in a more ethical and transparent way. You know, it's everybody from Eileen Fisher to Patagonia. Brooks Brothers produces some of their clothing in the United States. So does Club Monaco. Ralph Lauren just partnered with a Oregon yarn maker to produce a collection in the United States. There are, you know, this is a turning point. Companies have seen what's happened around the world over the last couple of years and know that consumers want an alternative.
So it sounds like you're optimistic that this could change.
I am. And part of the reason why I think it's going to change has to do with, quite simply, with the rising cost of producing overseas. The price of oil is up. The price of labor is up in China. And what's interesting is it's giving domestic suppliers a chance to compete again. So we're seeing more apparel being made in the United States again. Even since my book came out in 2012, U.S. production of clothing has spiked. So I think that the more, and that's good for overseas suppliers too, because the more Americans reconnect to the process of making clothes, the more they understand what ethically produced clothing looks like. When they go to a chain like H&M or Target or Forever 21, they're going to say, you know what, I want the clothes in these stores made just as ethically as if I was buying them from someone who made them down the street. There's no reason why we can't have that. We've seen it with food, so I think that fashion is the logical next step.
We're just about out of time, but one more thing I wanted to ask you about. In the book, you actually say your father used to shop at the Lovemans here in Chattanooga. I was surprised to read that. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. I actually grew up in Varnell, which is the community right outside of Dalton, Georgia. And in the book, I went to Spartanburg to research textile mills. So I'm very interested in the history of independent retailers in the South, and also the history of the textile industry in the South. You know, the South has such an amazing manufacturing base, and a lot of it has been lost, and a lot of it has been rebuilt around other industries. But I wrote so much in the book about how important the garment and textile trades were, and the clothing industry has been building a middle class in America. You know, it's such an amazing history. And like, also, I just love the idea that there was a time when you could go into a department store, independent retailer, and buy something that was made in America, it was reasonably priced, and it was just built to last. The craftsmanship was just incredible. And if you ask anyone over, you know, the age of 45 or 50, if they remember being able to walk into a store and buy something like that, you won't get them to shut up, because they just want to talk about it. They want to talk about how clothes aren't made how they used to be anymore, and there's just a real incredible history there that I try to write a lot about in the book.
Elizabeth Klein, thank you so much for talking with us. Your book is Overdressed, The Shockingly High Cost of Cheap Fashion, and you'll be here January 30th. How can people find more information about you, the book, your upcoming appearance?
They can check my website, which is overdressthebook.com, and I am also on Twitter at The Good Closet, and there's also an Overdressed Facebook fan page. So I encourage people to reach out to me online and through social media.
Thank you.
I'll see everybody next week. Thank you.